welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayera. This week, the podcast is sponsored by Robert Hammer in memory of his beloved late wife, Barbara Hammer. This podcast, Vayera, is in two parts. This is part one, and then the next one will follow. The podcast is by Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy. Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Admissions. And now, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. The last time I taught Parshat Vayera in this forum, I focused on the fact that God tells us why Abraham is chosen and what his and our unique mission is. For I have singled him out that he may instruct his children and his posterity to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is just and right, in order that the Lord may bring about for Abraham what he has promised. That's chapter 18, verse 19. Abraham goes on to prove himself worthy of God's trust as he challenges God, approaching God and saying to God, "Will you sweep away the innocent along with the guilty? What if there should be 50 innocent within the city? Will you then wipe out the place and not forgive it for the sake of the innocent 50 who are in it? Chalilacha me'asot kedavar hazel lehamit tzadik im rasha, v'haya katzadik kerasha. Chalilacha hashofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. Far be it from you to do such a thing, to bring death upon the innocent as well as the guilty, so that innocent and guilty fare alike. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly?" Abraham stays loyal to his autonomous sense of justice and takes huge risks in his quest to achieve it when God shares God's plan with Abraham and essentially invites him to protest. As Hashem accepts his plea, Avraham becomes in some ways almost a partner and a chavruta to Hashem. His worth as God's emissary and chosen on earth derives from his strong sense of tzedek and mishpat, righteousness and mercy, and his willingness to defend it even to God's self. The duty to protest and to stand firm with one's independent sense of ethics are hallmarks of this story, a beautiful and inspiring opening to the Parsha indeed. In today's podcast, I'd like to explore the relationship of this courageous story to the end of the Parsha, the Akedah, or binding of Isaac. The stunning protest displayed in scene one becomes even more profound as the Parsha closes with Avraham's silent submission to God's command to kill Isaac. While God's angel twice emphasizes the greatness of Avraham's willing personal sacrifice, "Lo chasachta bincha yechidcha mimeni," that you've not withheld your son, your favored one, from me. But the Akedah, or binding of Isaac, is not just a choice between compliance and disobedience, a willingness to have personal sacrifice on behalf of God. It's also an apparent choice between real good and evil. Even more than the personal sacrifice that's entailed in giving up it, Isaac, is the ethical conflict. If there's anything that a human moral conscience can determine on its own without the help of God, it's that one should not murder innocent children in cold blood. How much the more so if you're betraying your son and your wife? That is a clear violation of the ethical imperative. God's request demands what Kierkegaard calls teleological suspension of the ethical. So God tests Avraham twice, first in his willingness to make a personal sacrifice, and secondly in his willingness to act unethically in submission to God's command. If Abraham's greatness is in his willingness to take risks and stand up for the weak, how can he be willing to kill his own son? While he gives God what is his dearest possession, is he not committing murder and betraying both his son and his wife? What are we supposed to do with this paradox? The Midrash identifies Abraham's entreaty on behalf of Sodom and his willingness to sacrifice Isaac as the climax of a series of 10 tests. But how could he have passed them both with such opposite actions? Given the religious extremism we're facing in our world today, the Akedah is an especially tough text for us. As we see with ISIS and other religious extremists, blind faith and obedience can easily lead to moral blindness, and in certain circumstances can be the shortest way to leading to the most heinous deeds. I've been very moved recently in reading David Blumenthal's book, The Banality of Good and Evil, in which he argues that one of the most important components of moral education for today's society is to educate our youth to resist authority. How many evils have been committed in the name of just following orders? The heroic example of Abraham's courage with stone seemed completely undermined by the Akedah. Are we to follow our conscience or heed a trusted authority? What is the relationship between these two tests? This year, I'd like to explore two traditional approaches in two different episodes, the first of which I'll do now, sees them in tension with each other. And the second episode I'll do separately as part of a developmental process and then explore what they mean to us briefly today. So the approach I'd like to deal with in this session, in this little segment, is to see these two tests as counterpoints, as two moral and spiritual postures before God. As Rav Soloveitchik writes in an essay called Humility and Majesty, man is involved in an unresolvable contradiction, an insoluble dialectic, because he is caught like Abraham's ram in a thicket of antinomies and dichotomies. He swings like a pendulum between two poles, the thesis and the antithesis, the affirmation and the negation. Dialectical man cannot be committed to a uniform, homogeneous morality. If man is dialectical, so is his moral gesture. Judaism has indeed formulated such a dialectical morality. The Rav speaks about a morality of majesty and a morality of humility. The Rav student, Rabbi David Hartman, articulates it beautifully, and I quote, "Can I hide from Abraham that which I'm about to do?" is one of the most powerful verses in the Torah. In posing this rhetorical question, God, as the creator of the world, gives up unilateral authority over history. In asking this question, God himself articulates the essential model of covenantal morality. God can no longer act unilaterally. This is the covenant. In part of what Rav Soloveitchik calls the ethic of victory, God purposely left, he says, God purposely left one aspect of creation unfinished in order to involve people in a creative gesture and to give them the opportunity to become co-creator and king. So by inviting Abraham to argue with God, God's invitation and Abraham's argument with God proves that personal autonomy is vital to authentic religious life. That is one pole of the swinging pendulum of which Rav Soloveitchik speaks. But by placing the Akedah at the end of the Parsha, the Torah emphasizes that personal subordination, submission, and sacrifice are also vital to authentic human life. According to the Rambam, it's the latter posture, the submission, which should be viewed as primary. After he describes Abraham's sacrifice as an act of love and fear of which God, which abandons all hope of reward, the Rambam declares strongly, it is distinctly stated that one sole thing, fear of God, is the object of the whole law. Professor Yishael Leibovich points out similarly, religion of mitzvot imposes obligations and takes and makes of man an instrument for the realization of an end which transcends men. It is not about us. It's about doing what God says because God commanded it. Pure submission. Interestingly, Hartman says the opposite. And I quote, "The Akedah is not constitutive of Judaism. It is a moment in a religious life. but it's just that, a moment. It is not the organizing framework for how to live. The Akedah is the moment when we come to the edge of the intelligible, when we meet suffering or tragedy. There are moments when a life of faith requires submission or resilience or silence. Sometimes even Abraham is at a loss for an adequate response to the divine will. The Akedah means we acknowledge and allow a place for resignation as a moment in the spiritual life. Yet the defining metaphor for us must remain in the image of Abraham standing before God, not in submission, but in empowerment. The Abraham we look to must be the Abraham who's unafraid to argue with God. The measure of a human being, the very genuineness of a human being, is his or her capacity for compassion. This is the Abraham of the covenant. So while Rambam and Leibovich see submission as primary, and Hartman sees empowerment and autonomy as primary, Rav Soloveitchik doesn't see either of these poles as primary. They're mutually nourishing. Man must not always be victor. From time to time, he says, triumph should turn into defeat. God requires humans to withdraw from whatever man desires most. It is true of the father of the nation as well as the plain, ordinary people. For Abraham, it is to surrender his most beloved son. For us ordinary people, it is to submit to religious restrictions in every aspect of our lives, our sexual relationships, our eating, and more. But for Soloveitchik, the surrender ultimately powers empowerment. What happens after man makes this movement of recoil and retreats? God may instruct him to resume his march to victory and move onward in conquest and triumph. Rav Soloveitchik says, Abraham was told to withdraw and to defeat himself by giving Isaac away. He listened. God accepted Isaac, but did not retain him. God returned him to Abraham. And they shall take possession of the enemy's gate. It says in verse 22:17, Abraham found victory in retreat. So the framing of our parsha that opens with Abraham's protest and closes with his submissive obedience can be seen as deliberately dialectical, as two spiritual and moral postures of the courage to know and the humility to submit to what one knows, one doesn't know. For some thinkers, what is primary? And for Rav Soloveitchik, the power is specifically in holding them in tension. What seems to us a conflict could be seen as deliberately so. God tells us to embrace the paradox. God invites us to meet the world in full autonomy, to protest the wrongs we see in the world, and to take risks to achieve what seems right to us. At the same time, we must meet the world with humility. We stand before God as commanded in surrender and in deference. I want to share another take on this, but I'm going to do it in a separate bonus session. But if you don't manage to listen to that one before Shabbat, Dayenu, surely it is enough if we could find the strength to embody each of these spiritual postures and the wisdom to know which of them to adopt at each moment. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Mish Hammer Kassoy. Remember, this is just part one of the podcast. Part two follows as the next podcast episode on your podcast feed system. Thank you.